bonjour mes petites conchons, ça va moi? Je suis très excitante. Oh God, you know I did about 13 years of French lessons in school and that's about as good as my accent gets. I'm so sorry Madame van der Hoek if you're listening to this. I did try and at one point I did speak French, but I guess that's gone along with my ability to do long division maths. Welcome! My name is Perry and you are listening to another magnifique episode of Hello Mr. Burns, a research podcast where I talk about old school Simpsons episodes to see what we can learn from them.
I am too smart! S-M-R-T! I mean S-M-A-R-R-T!
So you might be saying to yourself, Perry, pourquoi parler le français? Oh, that was really good. Well, that's because today's episode is a steamy French deep dive into episode 9 of The Simpsons. So this episode is called Life on the Fast Lane. As always, we'll start with a super duper quick episode synopsis. We'll list out new and notable characters, and then we're just going to get straight into some good old research and did you knows. So this episode is called Life on the Fast Lane, and yes, I keep saying life in the fast lane. I'm only human. But this episode is said to be Matt Groening's second favorite episode behind Bart the Daredevil. So shall we get started? Oh, oui, allons-y. So this episode begins with Homer forgetting that it's Marge's birthday.
My birthday?
No.
It's my birthday? What did I get? I love birthdays.
No, Homer, it's mine. You don't even know your own wife's birthday?
Well, of course I know. Sure. You really thought I forgot, didn't you?
Oh, right. What'd you get her, Dad?
Yeah, what'd you get?
Well, a very thoughtful gift. But it's a surprise. You know, it's such a beautiful morning. I think I'll take a little stroll around the block.
I think he forgot, Mom.
Marge turns 34 years old in this episode, and she has stayed the same age ever since. So after realizing that he forgot her birthday, Homer rushes out and he buys Marge a bowling ball for her birthday. But she accuses him of purchasing it for himself, which is proved to be true as the bowling ball has Homer's name engraved on it, and the holes have been shaped to his fingers. So purely out of spite, God bless you, Marge, she decides to go to the bowling alley to learn how to bowl.
Hey, wait a minute. You're going to need a lane.
No, thanks. I'm just here out of spite.
And she's struggling at first, but suddenly she gets coaching from a French bowling instructor named Jacques.
Yes, I am a very good teacher, and I can teach you everything. I can tell you what the little arrows on the wood floor mean. Hmm. Which frame is the beer frame? I bet you don't know how to make a 5-7-10 split, do you, Marge?
Who actually develops a liking for Marge. Homer starts to suspect a romantic affair when Jacques invites Marge to his apartment. At the very last minute, Marge decides that she loves Homer, and she ends up surprising him at work. He sweeps her off her feet, and as he carries her out of the power plant, he says this.
Tell him I'm going to the back seat of my car with a woman I love, and I won't be back for 10 minutes.
The end. Originally, the silver-tongued, baguette-loving incubus character of Jacques was a Swedish tennis instructor named Bjorn. And so the original episode was going to be called Bjorn to be Wild. Cute, right? But then they actually had Albert Brooks in the studio and he decided to improvise a few characters on who this person could be. And they found that his French character was just the funniest thing in the world. So they decided to rename the character Jacques and make him a French bowling instructor.
And I've been to France. It's beautiful. I love a croissant. I love an omelette. Du fromage.
It is worth noting that in the UK, this episode was aired under the title Jacques to be Wild. Stupid name. Anyway, the characters making their very first appearance in this episode are Lenny Leonard, Jacques, and Helen Lovejoy. So Jacques, of course, is voiced by Albert Brooks, who improvised most of the lines. So we'll talk about that later. Just remember that. Anyway, so now let's have a look at this episode and see exactly what we can learn from it. So straight off the bat, shout out to Jacques for my favorite ever description of brunch right here.
Meet me tomorrow for brunch.
What's brunch?
You'd love it. It's not quite breakfast. It's not quite lunch, but it comes with a slice of cantaloupe at the end. You don't get completely what you would at breakfast, but you get a good meal.
Not going to lie, it took me an abysmally long time on this planet to figure out that brunch is just breakfast and lunch put together. I think I was about 16 when I realized, you know, so if you ever feel stupid, just remember that that happened to me. It was a good moment. So in this episode, it's also the first appearance of Barney's Bowlerama. So that's the Springfield Bowling Alley. The original backstory for Barney's Bowlerama was that it was owned by Barney. But over time, the writers realized that they could not imagine Barney owning anything. And so instead, they changed it to belong to Barney's uncle. The exterior of Bowlerama was actually designed by No Doubt member Eric Stefani, who is brother of Gwen Stefani. So before No Doubt hit the big time, Eric was a part-time animator who also worked on the Ren and Stimpy show. So he actually left to do animation full-time right before the band released their big album, Tragic Kingdom. He did actually write Don't Speak with Gwen, which is interesting.
What size shoes you wear?
Never you mind.
So in my research, I came across quite a few academics and fellow Simpsons nerds who had some hot takes on the family dynamics in this episode between Homer, Marge, and Jacques. Did you notice that I just say Marge? Like the French brand, Marge. I have been online shopping all morning, so maybe that's why. It is always interesting to me to take a step back and remember that, yes, The Simpsons is a children's show. It is a show that's been written for children, but this doesn't mean that all the narratives need to be childlike in nature. You know, they can be complex. I think we forget that children do actually understand a lot more than we give them credit for, apart from me, who up until she was 16 didn't realize that brunch was a conjugation of lunch and breakfast, but that's okay. Marge is one of those characters who is the archetype of the tragically repressed every woman. So we have seen her have a moment of breaking the wheel of the Stepford smile in Moaning Lisa, and here we see her struggling with an all too familiar, very, very human conflict of her own needs versus the needs of her family. Throughout the episode, we see Marge slowly begin to lean into Jacques' advances. Jacques is clearly answering a need in Marge that isn't being fulfilled by her marriage to Homer.
Marge, do you know how beautiful you look in the moonlight?
Oh, Jacques, I'm a married woman.
I know, I know. My mind says stop, but my heart and my hips cry proceed.
On the surface, Jacques is everything that Homer isn't. He's handsome, he's talented, he's good at bowling, he's romantic, and he actually cares for Marge. He's literally the embodiment of a lonely housewife's fantasy with his suave ways and his gyrating hips. And right from the get-go, he is almost too good to be true. He's a knight in shining armor, sweeping Marge off her feet, and it's almost like he alone can see her true value and worth as a person. So on the surface, yes, he is a dream man, but as with everything shiny, all that glitters ain't gold. He is, after all, knowingly seducing a married woman, and he seems to know his way around an affair way too much. You know, he even artfully dodges awkward social interactions like this with Helen Lovejoy.
Marge? Marge Simpson. You remember me, don't you? I'm Helen Lovejoy, the gossipy wife of the minister.
Oh, yes. Hello, Helen.
Well, I had just finished eating and was about to leave when I looked over this way and said to myself, why, isn't that Marge Simpson over there, having brunch with a man who isn't her husband? And I just had to come over and say hello. Oh, don't squirm on my account.
I am giving her a bowling lesson. Thank you. Now, Marge, the pins on the 3-7-10 split would be here.
Jacques is, in my opinion, you know, he's a predator. I think the moment we see the cracks in his armor is when we see him at home preparing for his date with Marge, just surrounded by a forest of skincare products and doing what's called the sexy getting ready song.
To the most beautiful moment in life, better than the deed, better than the memory, the moment of anticipation. Oh, Jacques, you handsome devil, look at you. You're really going to strike out tonight!
That was my favorite song from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. If you haven't seen it, it's great to watch.
It's a sexy getting ready song.
I was speaking with a girlfriend actually today during our walk, and I was saying that in this lockdown, that's probably one of the smaller little spices of life that I miss is like that moment, you know, like getting ready for a date. It's just, it's the best. It's the moment of anticipation. It's picking out outfits. If you're me, it's having a bit of a cry, calling a friend and complaining that you've got nothing to wear. It's all of that excitement building up. So I really miss that. But as we can see, it kind of makes us think of Jacques in a different light. He's obviously not a knight in shining armor. He's a bit of a sleaze. It's also worth noting that his accent does slip up at one point back to an American accent. I don't think this is done intentionally to place distrust in the character, although a lot of people online have said that it shows that perhaps he's not really French and he's just pretending to be. But the way I look at it is that Brooks, the actor, had improvised all of the lines, and I bet he just dropped his accent on one of them. So French intentions aside, Jacques offers a new awakening for Marge. It's an opportunity to rebuild her life and escape the rut with Homer. One Amazing Simpsons fan noted that Life on the Fast Lane is an episode built on unspoken tension. And you know what? I'm actually going to link their blog in the bio of this episode because it is a fantastic blog. So what they say is that this episode explores the unspoken sexual tension between Marge and Jacques and the unspoken psychological tension as the family sense their unity slowly and subtly falling apart. I had this really wonderful acting coach back in the day who actually, he had really super greasy hair and he always used to wear hoodies that were way too tight and showed his nipples constantly. And let me just say while we're on that topic, why do all male acting coaches feel the need to show their nipples? Like, I don't know, I've encountered maybe one or two who haven't done that, but most of them do. And literally, I've had at least one coach in three continents that were Free the Nipple Boys. Like, I'm all about a nipple, but just they're just always looking at me when they're talking to me. It's weird. Anyway, I always remember that this wonderful acting coach said that in a scene, when there are true, authentic human emotions running high, not dramatic soap opera tension, but real life tension, the characters will discuss anything but the tension. They'll use something mundane and completely unrelated as a placeholder for the real discussion they want to have. It made me think of in Bridesmaids, where you've got the police officer, Chris O'Dowd, and he's telling Andy, Kristen Wiig, to get her brake light fixed.
Do you have any idea how frustrating it is to see you night by night drive past me with your fucking taillight still broken? You have any idea how crazy that makes me? It's a simple solution. Your problem, Annie, is that you just don't understand that you can hurt people with these broken lights.
So the most obvious example in this in The Simpsons occurs after Bart says this to Homer.
But once you gave me some advice, it might help.
I gave you advice. Get out of here.
Yeah, you did. You told me when something's bothering you and you're too damn stupid to know what to do, just keep your fool mouth shut. At least that way you won't make things worse.
Good advice.
Homer then makes a sincere attempt to reach out to Marge one more time to get her to come back to him by complimenting her sandwich-making skills.
Marge, may I speak to you?
Sure.
You know, I've been thinking. Everyone makes peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but usually the jelly drips out over the sides and the guy's hands get all sticky. But your jelly stays right in the middle where it's supposed to. I don't know how you do it. You just got a gift, I guess. I've always thought so. I just never mentioned it. But it's time you knew how I feel. I don't believe in keeping feelings bottled up. Goodbye, my wife.
I know that sandwich making is sometimes used as a weird incel trope, but there is no undercurrent of that here. It's a mundane and pretty flimsy compliment, but it is as articulate as Homer can be. This is the closest that Homer and Marge get to confronting one another about their now unavoidable marital crisis, and it's almost worse than a confrontation. And this is where the writers of the show really shine. They've taken this boring, everyday topic and managed to frame it in a way that makes it unbearable anguish. The episode's conclusion is a reference to a 1982 film called An Officer and a Gentleman. And I actually had to go away and watch this film because I know of the reference, but I'd never actually seen the original. Let me just say, whew, the original, it smells like misogyny. So I know it was the 80s and things were different back then, but oh Jesus, is this what they were telling young people in the 80s? Christ. So, in the movie, you have Richard Gere as an orphaned loner who grows up to be an emotionally isolated opportunist. He joins the Navy, hoping to become an aviator. He is warned not to frolic with the opportunistic local girls who are looking to baby trap an unsuspecting Navy officer. The word baby trap is in little inverted commas, by the way, because I had to Urban Dictionary that one. So while he is warned not to do that, not to get trapped, he does fall into a romantic tango with the local factory gal named Paula, played by Deborah Winger. Paula is this independent-minded character, yet she's reduced, like all the working-class women in her town, to work in the factory and just wait for a man to swoop in and rescue her from her situation. The final scene sees Gere doing just that. He marches through the factory, he sweeps Deborah off her feet and carries her out of the factory while all the other workers applaud, and she wears his hat and waves goodbye to everyone. It's one of those references that I know from a variety of places like Scrubs, and I'll say up top that this film does a really good job at refueling the idea that female characters can be divided into two stereotypes. You've got the conniving honeypot, or you've got the diamond in the rough who needs a man to come and recognize her worth. You can probably guess that I'm not a fan of this film, and the actors actually agree too. Richard Gere said to Barbara Walters that he did the movie strictly for the money, and although she did get nominated for an Oscar for this film, Deborah Winger continues to deny to this day that she was ever in that film. She's doing a Shaggy on it. So when Marge is having a bit of a daytime fantasy about Jacques sweeping her off her feet, she imagines a dance scene that is actually a reference to a dance scene from The Gay Divorcee, starring Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. So The Gay Divorcee, I don't know if it's divorcee or divorcee because I've heard people say it both ways. I'm going to say divorcee because it rhymes with gay. So the plot of The Gay Divorcee is pretty much a story about, you know, it's much ado about nothing really. And the plot is said to be an excuse for a song and a dance. It is a classic though, so what can I say? So the film was actually based on a 1932 musical called Gay Divorce. The motion picture production code insisted that the studio change the name from Gay Divorce to Gay Divorcee on the grounds that while a divorcee could be gay or lighthearted, it would be unseemly to allow a divorce to appear so. Remember, this is back in the day when gay meant like fun, happy, hee. In fact, the studio that produced the movie, RKO, offered $50 to anyone who could come up with a better title. And the director, Mark Sandrich, came out and said that they chose The Gay Divorcee because they thought it sounded more attractive, like it was centered around a girl, wink, wink. So I feel like everyone knows about Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. Growing up, my auntie actually had a racehorse, I think, or maybe it was a horse that just lived on her farm called Fred Astaire, and that horse was a terror. Like, I couldn't go near it. It kept kicking everything. But what I found was interesting is when Fred Astaire was just starting out as a dance actor, RKO was RKO Radio Pictures. It's a now defunct film production company. So they had a now lost screen test for Fred Astaire. So that's where back in the day, the actors, of course, they'd do a screen test and that would be sent out to see. It's like an audition tape pretty much. By the way, RKO was RKO Radio Pictures, a film production company that went bankrupt in 1959. So it's said that on a now lost screen test for Fred Astaire, the audition notes just said, can't sing, can't act, balding, can dance a little, which is kind of fun. Fred Astaire later came out and insisted that the report actually said, can't act, slightly bald, also dances. Love that. Apparently, this screen test was so terrible that David O. Selznick, who'd signed Astaire to the RKO and commissioned the test, stated in a memo, I am uncertain about the man, but I feel, in spite of his enormous ears and bad chin line, that his charm is so tremendous that it comes through even on this wretched test.
Oh, well, thank you.
And that, my wonderful pals, is the end of a deep dive of Life on the Fast Lane, Episode 9 of Season 1, and ooh la la, we have seen a lot. Oh, my French is getting worse, I apologise for that. So in this episode we've seen that The Simpsons manages to convey the subtle art of emotional tension through mundane conversations about sandwiches, and uses some rather mature sources to convey the romantic ideation Marge experiences with Jacques. Also, the fairy tale ending we often see in media where the knight in shining armor comes and plucks his diamond in the rough and takes her off into the sunset. Sometimes I wish a Navy boy would come and pluck me from my office chair and carry me out of the building. But then I remember Navy Week in Hong Kong and seeing how sailors behave on shore leave, and I don't really think a boat boy is my vibe. The next episode I'll be covering is episode number 10, Homer's Night Out. And this is a crazy episode because it's got strippers and belly dancers, and it explores the stigma and perpetual narrative of men dehumanizing women who work in the sex industry. Whew. Yeah, there's also some really good stripper names, so we'll get into that. Anyway, guys, stay tuned for another cracker. Until then, my name is Perry. As always, keep watching the skis.